This podcast is presented by Celery.com, the one-stop shop e-commerce logistics provider.
It was kind of funny because it became the running joke that I was like the CrossFit drug dealer, because everybody would want to go out behind this warehouse after class and see what all the goods were. And, you know, in the wintertime they laughed. I should have gotten one of those giant trench coats, and you open it up and instead of like watches and sunglasses, you have like tank tops and t-shirts. But yeah, I sold out of the back of my car for a while before ever getting, you know, space really built out in my house and then an office and ultimately moving on from there.
Welcome to Celery Talks. This is a show that features ideas and the stories that are behind them. And I'm your host, Tad Kelsey. Celery Talks tells the stories of business ideas and the people that made them happen. Jake Thompson is full of enthusiasm and confidence. His drive and personality are infectious. Jake has huge goals, but when you spend time with him, you leave believing he will accomplish them. His lifestyle and apparel brand, Compete Every Day, is not only offering fitness apparel, but also in the business of growing and building the whole person. Jake, who is Compete Every Day? Tell us about your company and your products.
Compete Every Day is a lifestyle apparel brand built on the message that life is worth competing for. At the end of the day, we feel that we each make a choice to compete for our relationships, for our goals, for our careers, ultimately our lives. And so as a brand, we create products and resources to help encourage people to make that choice, as well as ways to encourage them along the journey. And we've started to really like build kind of a community of people that want to almost wage war on status quo.
Let's go back to before you started Compete Every Day and just really back to the beginning, actually. Where are you from? Where did you grow up?
I grew up about 2 hours east of Dallas. It's a small town called Jacksonville. There's only about 13,000 people there. So I grew up there, went to TCU out in Fort Worth, ended up staying in Dallas-Fort Worth ever since. Lived in Irving for a few years for grad school, and then have lived here in North Dallas. And I say I'll move to Nashville or San Diego, but I still can't see myself living anywhere but Texas yet.
What about life in Jacksonville, Texas, and then in North Texas as well? What about life here has contributed to who you are today?
Yeah, growing up was big because in small town, like my dad owns some gas stations out there, and you see the power of relationships, especially in business, and the importance of knowing their customers and knowing the people that come in and out of your store every day, even if they're there to get a cup of coffee in the morning. And so getting to see how my dad treated his customers and just that small town way of life, to where they know your name, they know things about your personal life, and that relationship matters beyond just a transactional piece, has heavily influenced my business and the way I try to operate. And then here in Dallas, you know, it's been a lot of those personal relationships, having the opportunity to connect with other entrepreneurs, other individuals who are just trying to build things and do things kind of out of the ordinary. And so that's great because I'm exposed to a lot more here than I would be back home if I still lived in East Texas, just because of the population. But also, you know, any thriving metroplex city, there's people that they're looking for a side hustle. They're looking to create something more. And so you get a lot of those bump interactions. And I'm very much one to believe that any single interaction can greatly change our trajectory for the better. And so the more opportunities you have to build those relationships, the better.
Have you always been entrepreneurial?
Yes and no. I never had the full-time 9-to-5, but I grew up working in gas stations. So I guess I kind of did from an early age before high school and stuff. I'd work on my dad's stores weekends, mornings, sweeping parking lots, working the register. And then after college during college, I wanted to be a sports agent. And so that's a very non-traditional career path. Chose after spending a few years in there, it really wasn't for me. And so I started consulting and I liked the freedom aspect of it. For me, a lot of it is I have some of the tendencies from entrepreneurship. I like the risk. I like the fear factor almost of the adrenaline rush of taking those gambles and having to almost fend for yourself. It's kind of the you eat what you kill mentality for a lot of entrepreneurs. And so that I do, I've always kind of been under that mindset, but I don't think I really, really figured it out until I had the idea to start Compete and started really phasing away from consulting and marketing consulting to focus on kind of the product-based business.
Earlier, you mentioned working for a sports agency. Is that what you thought you'd be doing after college?
100%. Yeah, when I was growing up, I knew pretty early on I was going to be too small for the NFL. So I wanted to be around the game. I mean, football's still my very first love. I love the game. This is like my favorite time of year. And right now, bowl season, the saddest time of year because it's dwindling down. But I did. I spent my junior, senior year of college interning for an agency, started working for that agent while I was in grad school in Irving, and just decided I didn't want any part of it after that much time in it. You know, it's a emotional roller coaster that in my early 20s I was ill-prepared for. And I laugh now kind of from an entrepreneurship standpoint. It's a lot of what I deal with now mentally because it's an up-and-down ride depending on the month and the year. And so it prepared me for that. But I think it's great for me to get away because I still love watching the game. And I know if I'd spent more time in there, I probably wouldn't have.
What were you doing before starting Compete Every Day?
So I was consulting. So I had, it was fall of 2008 was when I was finishing grad school and left the agency. Everybody remembers how wonderful the economy was at that time. And I literally couldn't get a job to save my life. I was MBA, non-traditional work experience, and so I didn't fit in traditional America's puzzle. So I started just freelancing, graphic design, basic marketing strategy, helping groups get accustomed to online and what online looked like, and just word of mouth. One would refer me to another and another, and eventually I built a pretty good consulting business. I mean, financially, I was very happy with things. I had a steady stream of income, steady client base, but something was missing, and that ultimately took me down the path and journey of starting Compete.
Now, what was the aha moment?
So for me, it was a long aha moment. It took months. So there's a book called A Million Miles in a Thousand Years by a guy named Donald Miller. And in the book, Miller talks about the great stories in life and the things that we could read time and time again, the movies we could watch over and over again. And they all have key characteristics. And from Miller's perspective, you have a character that's focused on a goal much bigger than themselves. They are willing to step into conflict or the unknown or fear for that goal. And they invite others alongside them for it. And Miller argues in his book that the elements that make for a great story, great movie, also make for a great life. And at that point, I really had to evaluate what kind of story my life was creating. And my consulting business was great, but the more I looked at it, the more it just became a sandcastle. And I knew at some point it was going to wash away. And so for me, it sent me down a path of exploring what can I build that lives beyond my years, and what can I build that's going to positively impact others? And so I had the idea for Compete and the message. It was on a ski trip with two of my best friends, threw the idea out of this brand message, and all the guys jumped on and they were like, man, that is you. Like, you're the most competitive person we know. But at that point, I had a brand name and no clue what to do with it. And it was about 6 to 8 months of tinkering with projects before apparel became the natural fit. My best friend is a fan of Life is Good, the guys out of Boston. And I've since become a massive fan of the Jacobs Brothers and the work they do. But ultimately, he challenged me to look at their story and their messaging and then take that same approach to a more athletic focus and market.
How did the company officially launch?
The first day I thought it was official is when somebody bought something online. We put a Shopify store up. I had friends that would buy t-shirts and tanks, and I still don't quite know if it's like, oh, we really like this, or like, oh, let's just get Jake to not pester us anymore. But I had someone in May 26, 2011 buy some wristbands.
So I mean, 2011
was like, yeah, I've got like May 26th etched in on a couple of whiskey bottles that we opened it at our 5-year anniversary, and we opened one kind of every year that we're still going. And so that was when it became official. Somebody I loosely knew but not very closely bought something online.
I've read that you began selling apparel out of the back of your car, which I don't think it gets more classic tale of striving entrepreneur than that. But do you remember your first buyer? Do you remember the first place you pulled up to and opened up your trunk?
Yeah, it was all behind the gym I was at. I was working out at a CrossFit gym in North Dallas, Addison area. And I remember when friends had been hearing about me starting the company, were like, hey, we want to come check it out. And so I had my car out back and would pop the trunk because that's where I was carrying my boxes of t-shirts. And so they'd come out and shop and buy stuff with cash. And It was kind of funny because it became the running joke that I was like the CrossFit drug dealer, because everybody would want to go out behind this warehouse after class and see what all the goods were. And, you know, in the wintertime they laughed. I should have gotten one of those giant trench coats, and you open it up and instead of like watches and sunglasses, you have like tank tops and t-shirts. But yeah, I sold out of the back of my car for a while before ever getting, you know, space really built out in my house and then an office and ultimately moving on from there.
How were you getting the word out about Compete Every Day in the early days?
A lot of it was word of mouth. A lot of it was utilizing social media. So talking about it, posting what I was doing, sharing what I was doing, you know, really writing. I did a lot of writing and blog posts on our website early years of sharing stories of what it looked like to compete every day. From pro athletes to individuals that I get connected with that were losing 200 or 300 pounds. Wild stories, but just trying to showcase what that message looked like in a number of arenas, and then just sharing that as much as possible. And I was very blessed and fortunate to have a lot of friends that saw what I was trying to do, even on the times it was ugly in the beginning, and helped spread that message for me.
So the company starts in 2011. When did you effectively go full-time focusing on Compete Every Day?
January 14th. I say it was a full-time hustle, and my side hustle paid the bills because I was still consulting with just enough hours and payments to cover my overhead, and then every other hour and waking moment was spent building Compete.
Tell me about the most difficult challenge you've had to overcome with Compete Every Day.
I would honestly say we're probably in the midst of it. We relied early on in our company's growth on events and trade shows, heavily within CrossFit, within marathons, and the entire active market in general has shifted, crazy shifted in the last 12 months. And really about 18, 24 months ago, we could see it shifting, especially within CrossFit. And so areas that you would usually rely on for an easy profit, easy growth, are not as much anymore. And so this year, I'd anticipated seismic shifts for 2018, and they came a year early. So this year has been a challenge for our team in terms of managing all of it. I mean, it's been a ton of change in terms of, one, we started working with you guys, and so that's been a huge relief to get the fulfillment off our plate. But on the flip side, we've been adjusting to not traveling as much on events, and how do we drive more online? And so really for us, it's been, you know, about steady from what we did last year in terms of overall sales, but it's come from different areas. And so we're really kind of strapped and challenging ourselves now to see what does 2018 look like? How do we make sure that it, you know, the setbacks that we had this year were just blips instead of permanent markers?
At what point did you see people wanted what you had to offer?
Toward the end of the first year, I would go to different events and talk to people. And within that, you would have somebody would walk up. We'll say, for instance, at one expo, it was a 60-year-old woman. And she walked up and looked at a shirt and started asking questions about the shirt. And she loved one aspect of it for this specific reason. And so we'd talk for a little while. She bought the shirt and left. 5 minutes later, this 18-year-old, bright, peppy cheerleader walks in and talks about the same shirt for a completely different reason. But both of them were all about this idea of pursuing greatness in these areas. And so she bought a shirt and left. And I was sitting there at that point because it happened just almost back to back. And I was like, all right, I'm really on to something. How do I continue to get this message out? And so that was kind of the growing point for me, was that. And then just year over year, as you continue to go back to certain events and you see just giant growth in those areas, you know that you're onto something. And so how do you continue to serve that community and audience in new ways that still kind of fills that encouragement need void?
What event caused the largest amount of growth for Compete Every Day?
Probably our biggest events in the past were the CrossFit Games Regionals in Texas. They did it a couple years in San Antonio and a couple years up here. Those have been kind of our single biggest weekends in person especially. And really 2013 and 14 put us on the map, in my opinion, in terms of the market, because there was still a pretty good void. I think it helped solidify us as the brand for that, at least space within Texas.
When did you know you needed to hire more people?
I just felt like I couldn't get enough work done. That was honestly it. So part of it was I hired a few consultants early to help me give a new perspective, because I think sometimes as entrepreneurs, we get so deep into the weeds that we need an outside perspective to help us really evaluate what's going on in our business. So I had some help early, just making sure I was plotting the right course that in my head I wanted to plot. And then really Christine was my first kind of full team member, and she joined right about the time I went full time, and she joined part time. And so she was helping me from an event standpoint because my bandwidth was tapped. I mean, and we were doing, you know, anywhere from 70 to 100 events a year. And, you know, on my end, I just couldn't keep the pace of multiple events a week, you know, every weekend. going on. And so at that point, she was able to offset a ton off my plate, as well as help take over some of those customer service issues that I was just losing creativity bandwidth and things that I need to be doing to creating content because I was spending more time kind of in the operations piece.
Who is the biggest buyer of your product?
So we have some individual customers that are fiercely loyal, and they are in our Shirt of the Month club almost every year. From a wholesale standpoint, Rogue Fitness right now is our biggest account in the wholesale space. We just signed Jackrabbit, which is a large running e-commerce retailer, and so we're excited to get their first shipment out here in the next week. So we're starting to dive more and more into that space as we continue to grow as a brand. Because it's really between a rock and a hard place for us in wholesale and e-commerce because we don't fit into the traditional retail model. I mean, from an athletic line, you think Under Armour, you think performance-based gear that's widespread, and we're not going to compete head-to-head with those groups. And then you look more in the boutique world, and a lot of the boutiques are cute, funny-type stuff. There's not really that inspirational piece. And so you look at groups like Life is Good and what they've done, and so they've done some REI, but they've done a lot of their own branded shops, and they licensed out their brand, and so they did some really strategic pieces. And so for us now, it's as athletic wear and athleisure and t-shirts become more and more just everyday wear for people, we're starting to identify more and more places that it makes sense for our price point product to go into these different shops. And so we're heavily focused on growing that market for us because we're getting out of kind of the event trade show space.
Are your products sold in any brick and mortar retailers?
Boutiques, small boutiques. So we've got retailers in San Antonio, Amarillo, Louisiana. Rogue carries them at their actual headquarters in Columbus. Jackrabbit will have them at Rogue Running in Austin and then another one of their retailers in DC. And we'll be in those different areas in terms of brick and mortar. Nothing here in DFW yet. We had a few smaller team sports accounts, but it wasn't a great fit for really either party. So now we're looking as more of these little boutique pop up who makes sense for us to align with.
How has e-commerce impacted your business?
I mean, it's 100%. The growth of the Shopify platform especially has changed my world. Because it's made everything so easy for us. You know, without e-commerce, I don't think we would have had a chance getting off the ground because the traditional retail model, it's so barrier-driven. And it's who you know and how much money you have. And in e-commerce, it's can you create something great? And if you can make it appealing enough, can you fulfill it? And if the customer likes the product, can you keep delivering on that? So it's all kind of in our hands instead of in everyone else's hands telling us that we're not allowed in kind of their game.
In Angela Duckworth's book, Grit, she talks about the personality trait of grit and determination being what she believes is the most important trait of successful people. I think your messaging, your story, you obviously have that. Where does your determination come from?
Looking at the long term, like the end goal, I very much take the approach of you're willing to grind and suffer and deal with kind of the blah if you understand what the glory at the end of it is. But it's the same approach that, you know, I think women have when they have children. Labor is not fun. It's painful. It's uncomfortable for 9 months, and then the actual process sucks, but they have a child at the end of it. And many of them go through that again and again. And kind of, we talked about my Achilles before we came on the show. Rehab sucks. The injections I had after I tore it were awful. But you go through that knowing at the end it's going to be better, and here's what it's going to look like. And so in my head, that is where kind of my grit comes from, is because I don't get focused necessarily on immediately what's in front of me and what I'm dealing with, but 4, 5, 10 years down the road, where do I want this company to be positioned, and how do we want to impact that community and the people that interact with us? And so at that point, you start weighing it, and it's like, well, yeah, that's absolutely worth dealing with this now for that later.
Have you needed to raise any capital from investors?
Not yet. It is a focal point for 2018, just so we can expand some operations. I think everyone in the retail space at some point or another has that conversation, because just the way the game is, a lot of your production eventually goes overseas. And even if it doesn't go overseas, it stays here, but your costs are incredibly high and you're taking risk on new products. So it's something we're going to start exploring this year, just as we want to expand some product offerings and really our ability to reach more people and new markets and new sports, things like that, that we'll look to do that just to help us grow.
What are 3 books you recommend our listeners read in 2018?
Resilience by Eric Greitens is a great one. Eric was a Navy SEAL. He's the governor of Missouri now, but he's writing to a friend of his struggling with PTSD and alcoholism and wanting to commit suicide. And it's about the idea of applying resilience every day. So I think that one's just absolute home run for any person to read. The Obstacle is the Way by Ryan Holiday is fantastic because I think a lot of times in society we see struggle, we see opposition, and we think this is not how it is and we need to do something else versus the idea of pressure creates diamonds, fire refines gold, that sometimes you have to go through those obstacles to actually get there and to ultimately become the person that can achieve the goal that you want to set out for. And then from a more business-focused one, man, I've got a stack of books that I could probably refer to. The one that keeps coming to mind is Smart Cuts by a guy named Shane Snow. And it's about looking at your business, looking at your industry, and looking at it from another industry's perspective. Where are the shortcuts, the smart cuts that you can implement and take from, say, the automotive industry and apply it to the apparel industry or vice versa? And so it's a great book that'll challenge your thinking in terms of how you're evaluating just the things that you see every day that just look so mundane to you. How can you start looking at other industries for fresh ideas?
What do your entrepreneur hours look like?
None set. There's some days that I'm starting at 5 and I'm probably between different projects and stuff working till 10 or 11. There's other days that I may, you know, spend an hour and a half, 2 hours doing emails and stuff, and that's it. I think it looks different for everyone. I think a lot of people have the mistake there's got to be a work-life balance. I think entrepreneurship, especially, your work is part of your life. And so it's a matter of carving out time for the things and the people that are important and being present during that time with them so that you're 100% there when you're with family. You're 100% in your work, and I think that helps you create those hours so it doesn't have to look 9 to 5 here, and then I'm doing this for this. And especially people trying to build a side hustle, they're like, I have no time. I'm like, get up 30 minutes earlier, get an extra cup of coffee, and you work for 20 minutes before people get up in your house or right after they go to bed if you're a night person, and just carve that out, because even 20, 30 minutes a day, you know, it's an hour, 2 hours, 2.5 hours during the week is more than other people are doing. And so 2.5 hours, put it to good use.
What does goal setting look like for you and your team?
You know, I think it looks a little bit different for everyone. We do a goal setting workshop with the community, and I have a worksheet that really was kind of a combination of me sourcing a bunch of different people's work and seeing what works best for me. And so I'd take a little bit here and a little bit here. And so for me, it's kind of a 4-page worksheet that I go through at the start of the year to where I write down the goal and then steps to accomplish it. And so I'll have like a note on my phone throughout the last 2 months while I'm thinking about goals for 2018 and what I really want personally and professionally. And so I'll write them in there. And then the other night I'm just at dinner. My wife was out, so I went and grabbed some dinner and a beer. And I'm sitting there waiting on the food and I'm looking back through my goals. So then I go back through and start putting steps. And I'm like, all right, if I want this, what do I have to do to get that? And then from there, well, if I want that to get to here, what do I have to do that? And so then I start reverse engineering it all the way down. And so when I finish, I have my personal 2 professional goals, speaking goals for the year and the steps that would get me there. And I'll screenshot it, save it in my phone. I'll print a couple of copies and then I'll send it to a couple of buddies and say, hey, I need you to hold me accountable for here. And here's the dates. So that works well for me, is setting that goal, being pretty vocal about it, because then I'm held to it. And it's as much a pride competitive factor that I don't want to say I'm going to do something and not do it, as much as I've got the right people surrounding me that are going to check in with me of, are you hitting this? Why haven't you hit that? What's going on?
Where do you hope to see you compete every day in 5 to 10 years?
Man, I want to be a global player. Like we sell internationally now, but I want to be in the talks. I mean, from a speaking standpoint, we've talked about a goal by 2019 that my income solely comes from speaking instead of company and speaking. And that competes really diversified in that we offer books, events, speaking, and apparel, all different avenues to impact people's minds and the idea of this perseverance and competing every day. And so for me, that's where I want us to be. I have some revenue goals, but for me, it's not really about the revenue as much as the more people we can impact and get them into the community and just changing something simple about their everyday life and getting them to make that choice every day. The financial piece will take care of itself. We need to focus on getting more people into the community and getting engaged. And then from there, it's just a positive chain reaction out.
That's something I feel like you have over Nike and Adidas. They don't have this community, and you're not just selling a product, you're building a whole person.
It's fun. You know, I love Nike as a storyteller. I think they're one of the best storytellers out there. But as a global brand, it's hard to make little communities of, like, you see someone else wearing Nike, you're like, man, we're in this. Whereas Under Armour has very much gone after a youth market and technology, which is fascinating to watch. And so their focus in the tech space has been more trying to develop that community piece. I mean, when they bought, I believe it was MapMyRun was one of the tech companies, they bought different companies trying to establish those community pieces because they see exactly what you're talking about.
What are you excited about right now and what's on the horizon in 2018?
I'm just excited for a new year. You know, it's funny. 2017's had its hiccups, but 2018, we're kicking off I Am a Competitor campaign to start the year to where it's going to be a sticker that you can fill out and share online of who or what you compete for. We've got some new wristbands that says I Am a Competitor. Actually wearing one here is kind of that reminder of who you are and giving, you know, a little bit of that identity piece to it. It's going to be more people telling what they compete for and what's important to them and who is than us telling them choose to be a competitor. So I'm really excited to see that, as well as just as my speaking and our team continues to work on my opportunities to get on stages and impact people, just the relationships that I can build and the people I get a chance to talk to about what it looks like to compete every day and what their life could look like if they choose to do that.
Check out the Compete Everyday brand and join the Compete community at CompeteEveryday.com or on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Compete Everyday. Thanks for downloading episode 10, and we will see you back here next time. Subscribe and leave a review on iTunes, and you can also listen on Stitcher or at Podomatic.com.